backcountry really is what I call the backbone of the visitor experience in British Columbia.
Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast. Your host is Brad Harrison, who's worked and adventured in remote settings his entire life. He's the executive director of the Backcountry Lodges of British Columbia Association, former owner-operator of Golden Alpine Holidays, and current owner-operator of Colwest Alpine Adventures. Now, here's Brad Harrison.
Welcome to another episode of the BLBCA's Mountain Escapes. We are pleased to have a chance to chat with Walt Judas, Executive Director of the Tourism Industry Association of BC. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
Hi, Brad. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Before we jump into the business of tourism, can you just let us know a little bit about yourself, Walt, how you ended up being the Executive Director of TIA BC?
Well, I actually kind of fell into the tourism sector itself. I was working in broadcasting as my first career, having graduated from BCIT. And while I was working in radio, I got a call from BC Pavilion Corporation, a crown corporation that ran facilities like BC Place Stadium and the Convention Center. In fact, it still does so today, but it had a number of other venues that it was operating. And they were looking for somebody in communication, somebody that could write radio copy, somebody that understood media, etc. And would I be interested in joining the organization in that capacity? So I explored it a bit further. I went in for an interview. It was 15 minutes long. Sorry, the vice president at the time said, when can you start? He talked for basically 15 minutes of our 20-minute interview. And within 2 weeks, I found myself out of radio and transitioning to the dark side, as it were. And Pavco, running those venues and also operating the Whistler Golf Course at the time, a transportation museum in Cloverdale, was obviously a key part of the tourism industry and reported to the Ministry of Tourism. So that's kind of how I fell into it. It wasn't something that I was looking for. Then after Pavco, I joined the Vancouver Port Authority for a couple of years, again, in a communication capacity. And they, of course, had some responsibility within the tourism sector, more specifically on the cruise side. And then after that, I was recruited again, ultimately to Tourism Vancouver, where I spent 15 and a half years. And when I left there in February of 2015, I found myself with TIA BC in the current role being an advocate. So I kind of went from the marketing side of the business and always on the not-for-profit or Crown Corporation side into a private sector association at TIA BC, which is effectively an association of associations. So our members are BLBCA, Taxi Association, BC Lodging and Campground Association, BC Hotel Association, and the list goes on and on and on. So that's the role at TIA BC, and here I am some 30 plus years later, still involved in the tourism sector in some capacity.
So you've obviously seen a lot of changes over your extended time. Can you give us your thoughts on the overall state of tourism in British Columbia at this time?
Well, it goes without saying, and I probably don't need to repeat this, but the last couple of years obviously have been the toughest our industry has ever experienced, no question. I've been through a lot of crisis scenarios within tourism. You will recall that after 9/11, some 20 years ago, that tourism effectively shut down for a period of time. With all of the security protocols that were implemented in the United States in particular, but also in Canada and elsewhere in the world, it took a while for the tourism sector to build back up. And we lost business for a period of a few months. Then there was SARS a couple of years later. There have been crises, even thinking back to 2008, where we had a world economic crisis and tourism slowed down. But it was mere months and not a couple of years like the pandemic produced. And so we've come through that period, and the expectation was that it would take probably 3 to 5 years to normalize tourism again? In other words, to get back to similar numbers that we experienced prior to the pandemic. And the prognostications are still about a 3 to 5 year full recovery, but it really depends on how you measure that. When we look at what's happening at present, I think we see a lot of sectors have rebounded. A lot of parts of the province have rebounded. Some, in fact, have exceeded 2019 numbers, but some still have a ways to go. So, for example, the major attractions in areas around the province are probably experiencing 70% volume of what they experienced in 2019. Some hotels are doing better in terms of average daily rate or occupancy, but that also has to be balanced against how much that hotel in particular can open. In some cases, they've still got floors of hotels or wings closed because there isn't the requisite amount of staff that they need to operate at full capacity. There are sectors such as golf and fishing that have done extremely well, or camping, as you would know, has performed really well even throughout the pandemic. So it really depends on where you are in the province, and it depends on what sector. Restaurants, I'll use the hospitality side of the business. Many of them suffered greatly, although several were able to remain open during the pandemic by offering more takeout services than in dining. And now the restaurant sector has bounced back with a vengeance. Cruise, as we know, cruise was effectively shut down for 2 years, and there are a record number of sailings in places like Victoria. Or you look at the meetings and events sector as another example. That was effectively shut down, but there is huge demand on meetings and events, albeit more domestic than international, but that's expected to bounce back soon. So I realize I've thrown a lot at you from different sectors, but that can give you a flavor of where we're at. At the same time, one of the key measures that we look at overall is the revenue that tourism tends to generate on an annual basis. And prior to the pandemic, it was about $22 billion province-wide. It dropped to below $7 billion in both 2020 and 2021. We'll be back again north of $10 billion, but really it's anybody's guess what we'll arrive at by the end of 2022, simply because we don't have the volume of international visitors that we used to have. That'll take a while to build back for a number of reasons. And international visitors tend to spend 3 to 5 times more than domestic visitors. So the indicators are there. We're bouncing back. A lot of tourism sectors and businesses and parts of the province are really busy, but it'll take a while to get back to pre-pandemic numbers and beyond.
Outside of the, you know, the actual hard metrics and the numbers that you quoted, can you just give me a sense of how important you think tourism is to BC's socioeconomic situation?
It's vitally important. And in fact, I think it took the pandemic for people to realize, including politicians, how important our sector really is. We've been trying to, for years, suggest to all levels of government the value of the industry, not only from an economic generator perspective, but in all aspects of society, whether that's our contribution to sustainability initiatives, and you know that all too well as the former head of the Adventure Tourism Coalition and still actively involved, but also with your sector. So sustainability, the value to sustainability, the value to reconciliation, and how tourism can be a catalyst in reconciliation, and how it can incorporate Indigenous communities and Indigenous experiences into what we offer visitors and locals for that matter. The importance of tourism to things like equity and diversity and inclusion, and how tourism has set the bar or really led in those areas in many respects. The importance of tourism to being able to resolve some other societal issues, whether it's a contribution to solving housing issues or other issues that people care about. I think tourism is often overlooked in that regard. In fact, I think, too, that tourism was a catalyst and can be a catalyst for further infrastructure development. We're often the ones to recognize what communities need, not only from a resident perspective, but from a visitor perspective. And we're the ones that are advocating the government for some of those opportunities. So it's extremely important as a sector. In fact, as you would know too, Brad, that when people visit here for the first time, they recognize what an amazing place that we have. And often that spurs them to consider moving here or opening a business here or investing in a business, likely tourism, but could be really in any other sector. So it's a catalyst for many different things. And we think that that's now much more recognized than it was prior to the pandemic, but it certainly doesn't mean that our work is done. We still have much work to do to convince all levels of government that tourism is one of the top business sectors and that we need to continually look at tourism as an opportunity to address societal issues and opportunity for economic growth and opportunities for young people, career opportunities for really anyone.
This is the BLBCA's Mountain Escapes podcast. Thank you for listening. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you hear us on. Leave us a 5-star review and we'll maybe share some of our favorites on a future show. Now, back to the podcast.
This is the Mountain Escapes brought to you by the BLBCA. We are chatting with Walt Judas, Executive Director of the Tourism Industry Association of BC. Walt, you know, I'm with the ATC representing much of the backcountry side of BC tourism. What do you see as the main differences between front country and backcountry, the sectors?
Oh, gosh, where do we start on that one? There are many, many differences. Of course, in the front country, I think tourism is pretty obvious to most. When you're in a city or in an urban environment, you see the numbers swell, especially at this time of the year. It's obvious that there are visitors in the retail shops and in the restaurants, and you can see them wandering the streets. You can see them on tour buses. You can see them at attractions. It's pretty evident when a place like Vancouver or Victoria or Kelowna or Kamloops is full of visitors at times of the year. In fact, in the front country, I would say that the front country is really where most people visit. In fact, I think it's 70% or thereabouts that drives the tourism revenue in the province is really in the front country. The access is easy. You've got the major airports. It's familiar. The experiences are more prescribed. When you look at the backcountry, obviously it's less exposed or known. And I say that even from a local's perspective or a resident's perspective. They often don't get exposed to the backcountry. They don't see what goes on in the backcountry. They don't experience the backcountry, particularly those that live in urban environments. The average person just simply doesn't know it as well. In fact, I would suggest that the backcountry is more well-known or in some respects geared toward international visitors who are looking for the types of experiences that British Columbia offers. They're more adventurous. They want to experience something that the average person will never experience or doesn't really think about. And so I think those are some of the obvious differences to be sure, but the backcountry really is what I call the backbone of the visitor experience in British Columbia. It's something that we put out front in our marketing efforts to the rest of the world that people from different countries will see in the types of marketing or advertising that we're doing internationally, but residents in the major urban centers don't necessarily see from a marketing perspective. And it doesn't come top of mind when they're thinking about what to do for a family vacation. So those are some of the differences that I see, notwithstanding the issues that are different between the front country and the back country that, of course, all of us as advocates and sector associations tend to deal with on a daily basis.
British Columbia, Canada is a backcountry skier's paradise with epic snowfall, vast alpine terrain, and cozy remote backcountry lodges. Your adventure begins here at backcountrylodgesofbc.com.
Do you think that the members of the front country sector of tourism understand what backcountry tourism represents and how it operates?
Boy, that's a good question, Brad. Hard to say. I would like to think that they do, especially those that have been around for a long, long time, or those that tend to travel on business around the province, etc. But at the same time, I think many don't, and probably need some level of education to understand the differences. What I see often is that people that live in cities, in major centers like Vancouver and Victoria and elsewhere, don't often appreciate what goes on in the rest of the province. And I would say that's even the same at a political level. It's difficult to appreciate what people in rural parts of British Columbia have to contend with or experience in comparison to what those of us that live in the big centers do. The big centers often get most of the attention or most of the investment for some of the obvious things that we need. And that tends to mean that those in the smaller or more rural parts of the province or backcountry sectors of our industry aren't as well understood, and the problems aren't addressed in the same manner.
What do you see as your main role in supporting all types of tourism in British Columbia from your perspective and from TIBC's perspective? What are the main focuses?
There are so many issues in our industry that either have existed for years or that tend to come up, whether it's government regulation or legislation that is being proposed. I think really, from my perspective, TIBC being the voice of tourism, we have to ensure that government understands all of the issues that the multiple sectors are dealing with. It can be something as simple as taxation, looking at what now governments around the province are doing. I'm talking about civic governments are doing relative to the municipal and regional district tax, which you know funds the tourism marketing system around the province. Upwards, I think, of 60 communities have access to MRDT to use to market their specific jurisdictions. It's to be used for tourism projects, programs, and obviously marketing. But communities are seeing it as an opportunity to advance other interests. From an infrastructure perspective, you have Tofino that has been given permission to use MRDT if need be to fund a wastewater treatment plant. Well, with that decision, other communities are saying, well, maybe we can use part of MRDT instead of tourism marketing projects and programs for things like police on the beach or other initiatives that are of a non-tourism priority. And so you have situations like that where an organization like TIBC has to appeal to the province to say, look, let's button down what MRDT can be used for, why it's important, and why we need to retain the integrity of MRDT so we don't compromise the tourism marketing system around the province. So that's something that can apply provincially. But there are many other issues that are more localized in nature that we need to bring to the attention of government. I think of ones like fishing, which most people don't appreciate. While fishing is certainly prevalent in all parts of the province, when you look at, say, the Cariboo-Chilcotin Coast region, there are often decisions that are taken either at the provincial or federal level that cut out the fishing sector from being able to continue what they do and being able to welcome guests from all over the world and having access to the rivers and waterways that they need to conduct business. And those decisions, while they tend to be localized in nature, they have implications on the rest of the province, to be sure. There are many, many situations where we may help out a specific community or look at a specific sector and either lead the advocacy initiative, participate in it along with other sectors like yours, or follow the issue and jump in where we need to influence change. I always say to people when they ask about the Tourism Industry Association of BC and what it is that we do, the best way to summarize it is we advocate for changes to policy, eliminating policy or introducing new policy as it affects the visitor economy. So that's our role. But on any given day, we could be dealing with five issues that need attention. And we have to determine what the priority is based on where government is going or what government is thinking or what industry is telling us is the priority. Another major issue that's come up as of late is old growth forests and the need to retain old growth forests for not only environmental and sustainable purposes, but also for sectors like tourism and how we see old growth forestry as a key driver of visitation and what people want to experience versus logging those forests or versus the damage that logging those forests could do, not only on our sector, but on the environment. And of course, that plays out in places around the province and more recently on Vancouver Island. So it's really multi-pronged from Taya BC's perspective, but equally important in every part of the province, to be sure.
Certainly don't envy the amount of stuff you have to deal with on a daily basis, Walt. In the tourism industry, we certainly appreciate your efforts. One last thing I wanted to just talk to you about was so residential pushback on over tourism. And I get quite a few questions from businesses and our association members on how to approach that reluctance. I just wondered if you had any advice on that.
It's a topic certainly that we're hearing more about, and we see it played out in places around the world like Venice and Barcelona, where residents are really resenting visitors in their communities. I don't think we've experienced it to anywhere the same degree as some of these other international jurisdictions. That said, there are some areas of the province that we have seen degradation of the trail system or where people are overrunning a place like Goldbridge to do mountain biking, and they're really not investing in that community. They're coming in for the day. They're taking up a lot of trail space, leaving their garbage behind. They're starting fires. We've heard multiple incidents like that, and that's really people not respecting the environment around them, and it's causing a lot of resentment by locals. And fortunately, those situations are few and far between in our province, but as more domestic travelers have discovered the province, we're starting to see the need for better education and the need to really tell people as they're traveling into the backcountry, for example, or places like Joffre Lakes, look, you've got to respect the environment. You've got to respect Indigenous territory. You need to clean up after yourself. There's a huge campaign now underway in the Sea to Sky region that speaks to some of those things. We have a part to do as an industry to educate guests, but at the same time, I think we also have to work with local communities. As an industry, working with local governments and other stakeholders, including residents, to say, okay, what does tourism look like for our community? How important is it? What are your pain points as a community when it comes to welcoming visitors back? Where are the issues? How can we as sector associations, as individual businesses, help to resolve some of the challenges that we're finding as a consequence of too many visitors? Maybe it's a seasonal thing Is there a way that we can disperse those visitors to other times of the year? Do we have to set up a system whereby it's a permit process, like when you go on the West Coast Trail, by way of example? Is that necessary to go into the backcountry? Do we need people at the trailhead to ensure that people are equipped to do things like backcountry hiking or skiing or what have you? Oftentimes, we find that people that want to experience something they haven't before are ill-equipped. They just don't have the knowledge. And as a consequence, you see them being bailed out by rescue teams just simply because they are ignorant and ill-equipped. So there's a number of things that we have to do. But I think above all, it's really connecting with residents to obtain that social license that is so important for us as an industry to be able to carry on. And it's also demonstrating that we have something to contribute, not take away. But one more thing that I think is vital, and you can appreciate this as an operator as well as the head of your organization, and that is people may want to consider being guided when they're in places like the backcountry or when they're planning a trip somewhere. It's one thing to be able to wander all over the place and kind of do what you want. It's quite another to work with commercial operators that understand the lay of the land, that understand what's permissible, that know where they're going, that are well equipped to provide first aid, that really can provide a guided experience that is so far and away better, whether it's the indigenous that can talk about the land and what it means and the history of a community, etc. We really have to encourage more people to consider a guided tour at the right times of the year where we aren't taxing local communities with volumes of people that really they can't handle. So there's a number of things, as I mentioned, that I think we can do, we have to get better at, and hopefully some of the issues that we're finding in our sector aren't as prevalent as perhaps they were during the pandemic.
Walt, thanks so much for your time and insight. It's very helpful. Folks are interested in learning more about TIA BC. How would they best reach you?
Well, I don't mind actually publishing my home number, or my mobile number, I should say. It's 778-953-0620. 778-953-0620. I love to hear from people, particularly those in our industry that have ideas about what TIA BC's priorities should be. My email address is wjudas@tiabc.ca. And of course, you can find us online at tiabc.ca. And we also have our social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, that are easily found by Google search. So with that, I want to thank you, Brad, for having me.
Thank you, Walt. This has been the BLBCA's Mountain Escapes. We have been fortunate enough to visit with Walt Judas, Executive Director with TIA BC, and we thank you for listening in. Please take good care.
Thanks for listening to Mountain Escapes, a backcountry podcast brought to you by the Backcountry Lodges of British Columbia Association. Copyright 2022. Produced by Volt Productions.